So, Bob, the 30th anniversary of Back to the Future is just around the corner.
It is.
What do you got planned?
A lot is happening all over the country. Coming up on October 15th and 16th, Back to the Future in concert at Radio City Music Hall in New York. There's some other Back to the Future in concert dates, and you can go to backtothefuture.com to find out about it, or Google Back to the Future in concert. Big fan celebration in Los Angeles called We're Going Back. That's a five-day celebration from October 21st through the 25th. Tons of cast and crew will be there in LA, so go to WeregoingBack.com. The capper of that is a recreation of the Enchantment Under the Sea dance at the original location, and I believe Harry Waters Jr. will be there to sing Earth Angel. So the Washington West Film Festival in the Washington, D.C. area, Reston, Virginia, October 21st through the 25th, and we'll be showing all three films throughout that period. And I understand that the town of Reston is renaming itself as Hill Valley for this time period. So I'll be appearing there with Christopher Lloyd on October the 25th. So there you go.
What?
The IDW comic book, Back to the Future, Untold Tales and Alternate Timelines. First issue comes out on October 20th. It's the first of four issues. There may be more after that, but they have a four-issue commitment, and each issue will have two tales of our Back to the Future characters, so that's well worth checking out.
Future is my favorite thing. Always talk about it and write songs to sing. Even though there was never a part four, Marty McFly is coming back for more. I don't make money, get no fame. Love for these characters is what I blame. Podcast about comics and cartoons and more. Cause there's still things to explore in Marchie McFly 4. It's Marchie McFly 4. Can you feel it?
Welcome back, everybody. It's day six. It's March 6th. It's Marchie McFly 4. You can tell that I really did not have a plan when I hit record, but I'm here. I do have a plan for this episode, and I'm excited. I'm excited to talk Back to the Future, and I'm equally excited to take a break from the Back to the Future animated series. Don't worry. Don't worry, you animaniacs. Hey, that is actually a thing. We'll be back talking about Back to the Future, the animated series, tomorrow. But today we're taking a little bit of a divergent track in the Back to the Future world. Because there are only 26 episodes of the Back to the Future cartoon, we cannot do a full Marty McFly just covering the cartoon. And to that I say, oh, thank God, because I want to talk about other things. And the cartoon, while is fun to look at and examine and kind of poke holes and just have fun with, it's nice to kind of take a break and go in a different direction, but still with the characters that we love. Actually, probably today, I feel like I'm spending time more with the characters I love than what I do with the cartoon, because the cartoon is just a really stripped down childish version of the Back to the Future world we love. But if I want to watch something, or you know, if I want to consume something more mature, more sophisticated, well, where else to turn but to the world of comic books? Now, that opening you heard today was from a video that I'm going to post a link to in the show notes for a channel called Beyond the Marquee Show. It's on YouTube, and they did all kinds of episodes. They cover a lot of Back to the Future things. And this was posted 8 years ago, back in the year 2015. It was an interview with Bob Gale. I think they did a bunch of things with Bob Gale. But this was to lead up to the 30th anniversary of Back to the Future. So there's all kinds of events and all kinds of celebrations. And in that video, Bob Gale mentioned the Untold Tales and Alternate Timelines, the Back to the Future comic published by IDW Comics. He mentions there are four issues and possibly more. My understanding is it was originally called the Untold Tales of an Alternate Timelines. They made five issues, and then they were all kind of standalone stories. Then the Back to the Future comic series continued, have, you know, with its own story, I think an overarching story. Overarching? I never know. Which makes me want to go and read more of them. But even though I did not know about this book in 2015, in 2016, I had my sweet 16th birthday. Okay, in 2016, I turned 40, and that was that. This feels like a long time ago. I was just a kid, you know. I didn't know any better about the world of podcasting. I did it, but I didn't do it as much as I do it today. On my 40th birthday, what better gift than to receive a Newbery Comics exclusive trade paperback, Back to the Future, The Untold Tales and Alternate Timelines. I received this from dear friends, Christopher and his wife, Joanne. Now, this guy, he's a few years older than me, so he grew up, went to school with my brother, so he always hung out with my brother, but I always knew him. I've known him almost my entire life. I don't remember not knowing him. But he has the pleasure of loving all these fun, nerdy things, and his wife loves it too. So they go and do fun, nerdy things. They've gone to conventions. They've met, Michael J. Fox, Christopher Lloyd, I think Tom Wilson. They've gone to like the Back to the Future conventions. They've gone to the Smallville conventions, and they've said, "I should come. I really should go someday. I should just go with them, and go." There's local Comic Cons around here, but they got me this comic book, and it is a treasure, and I love it. And today we're going to talk about the first part. Now, this is a trade paperback from Newbery Comics. If you don't know Newbery Comics, it's a place where I don't think I've ever bought a comic book. I don't think of it as a comic book store. Now, it started in Boston. I think it was on Newbery Street. I think it might still be there. But for me, I first knew about it when the Newbery Comics opened in Salem, New Hampshire. And that's where I would go to get rock t-shirts, to get posters for my wall, to get CDs, compact disc. I think I even bought a cassette there once. You get all kinds of like memorabilia and stickers. And I feel like it was Hot Topic before Hot Topic, but and there's a place now. So when I was growing up, there was a record store called Strawberries. And across the street was Newbery Comics. And I feel like Newbery Comics kind of put Strawberries away. Even though I did go to Strawberries for the midnight sale of Metallica's Reload, I want to say. I don't think it was Load. No, maybe it was Load. And then Reload I just got in the afternoon. Or maybe Reload I got at Newbery Comics. But I definitely went to a midnight sale over at Strawberries for Load. And I remember it was crowded across the street in Newbery Comics. It's not in the store it used to be. It's now at a mall down the street. I can't imagine that it's still there. I remember when I was in high school, that mall, I think it was a Sam Goody, then an FYE. Now it's the Newbery Comics. I don't know how these places are still in business, but maybe they focus more on memorabilia and merchandise and, you know, nerdy stuff. I don't know the last time I've been in that store. And yet, at my advanced age, I have gone to a Hot Topic and bought a Rock and Roll t-shirt because, you know, I'm a grown-up. Anyway, the point is what's my point? I don't know. This is a Newbery Comics exclusive. Back to the Future, the Untold Tales, and Alternate Timelines. Now, if you follow some of my other podcasts, you might have, you might be familiar with the format that I'm about to do. I like to read these comics, and I'm going to read them to you. Today, we're going to talk about issue number one. Now, this collected comic has 5 issues. So in the video at the beginning, Bob Gale says there's only 4. Well, guess what? We have 5. And if you do 26 episodes of cartoon plus 5, what does that equal? 31 days. But I have other things I want to do too. So in some episodes, I'm going to be talking comics. Maybe I'll talk 2 comics, or maybe I'll talk a comic and the other thing I want to talk about. Because I do want to leave the last episode to something that I have an idea for. And I think I've already mentioned it, but I'm not going to mention it again. And then I have another idea for another episode that might be like, it's going to be a podcast, but there might be a video aspect to it. I'm not entirely sure yet, so I'm playing around with that. But I have many weeks and many animated episodes to go through to also make room for that. And I still want to get Jay and Eric on this show talking the cartoon. So I'm excited to do that as well. But today I thought we'd go back to 2015 and read The Untold Tales and Alternate Timelines, Back to the Future, issue number 1. So I mentioned the other podcast that I do, and I forgot to mention what they are. I do a podcast called Reaction Comics, where I read and poke fun at the classic action comics, the classic Superman stories in action comics. And I also do a podcast called Stranger Danger, which is a Stranger Things podcast where I cover every episode. But I also cover the books, and the comics is something I call the Stranger Danger Book Club. The books I just kind of give quick reviews over, but the comics I like to read through for the listening audience at home. And that is what I am going to do today. And it's funny, I was looking for a video, something that mentioned the comic, and there is someone took these comics and basically made like a radio drama out of it, or a video live comic book story. I don't even know how to, motion comic, where they took, it looks like they either scanned or got the digital, oh, they probably got the digital, and took the digital and did the voiceovers for all of it. Now, I'm not going to do all the voices. I'm not going to do, maybe I'll do some of the voices, but the comic, let's just talk about the comic itself, first of all. This is a trade paperback, and if you don't know what that means they'll take, comic books will take, you know, 5 or 6 issues of a comic that maybe covers a story, and they will put that in a collection, and they call that a trade paperback, and it's a thicker comic book. So you could get, you know, this is number one. If I had a few of these, instead of all the thin comics, you know, I could get these collections and kind of read them all together. So that's why they call them, I don't know why they call them a trade paperback, maybe because they like to trade them as paperbacks. I don't know. Now, the because it's a collection, it has a nice long introduction written by Bob Gale that I'm not going to reread. I read it years ago. I'm not going to reread it or bother you with it today. The cover of the book just shows what looks like, I think it's actually a photo of the DeLorean with the door open. You're kind of a back view. You don't really see anybody or see much, but I don't think it's a drawing. I think it is a photo. But because this is a collector's edition, they do put in the cover of each issue so you can kind of see what the cover of the single comic would be. This one shows, it's like a kind of a collage almost. There's a Welcome to Hill Valley sign. There's Lorraine, Biff, George, Marty, Doc, and, you know, the terrorists chasing the DeLorean, of course, because you got to have the terrorists on the cover. And this comic has 2 stories. Oh, this cover art was from Dan Schoenig, and the colors were by Luis Antonio Delgado. There's 2 stories in this comic. This one is called When Marty Met Emmett. and it is a story by Bob Gale. So it's not just, they didn't just give the world off and just hand it off to writers like they did with the cartoon. No, Bob Gale is, he's in on these stories. You know, these are his kids. These are his children. This is his creation, really, with Bob Zemeckis. He came up with the story, and he co-wrote the script with John Barber. The art is by Brent Schoonover, and the inks by David Witt, colors by Kelly Fitzpatrick. Again, if you don't know comic books, sometimes the artist does everything. Other times, they'll do the pencil drawing. They'll come up, they'll put everything there. Then someone will come in and do all the coloring, and someone will come in and do all the inking. Sometimes they have people who actually do the lettering. They give the credits to the letterers too. They didn't do that here, but it's a team effort. So this comic opens up with Doc. Looks like he is welding something, working on something. And I don't exactly know where he is yet. He's in some sort of workshop. He's got these like steampunk looking goggles on, and he says, "Great Scott! 0.04 gigawatts. That's it. That's it." And then an extremely disappointing outcome. Emmett, he's like, "Huh? What?" He turns and we see Clara, Jules, and Vern looking very much like they're right in the 1880s still. And she's like, "Relax, Emmett. It's just us." And one of the kids is like, "Duh," because they're, you know, they, I guess they have the old way of saying dad is "duh." Duh. And Emmett's like, "Oh, of course. My mind was merely fully immersed in the problem at hand." And Clara says, your never-ending attempts to return to the future. And Vern's like, "Future? Future?" I don't know why he's got an accent, but the way he says future, it seems like there's an accent. And Doc says, "I'd say go back to, but essentially your mother is correct." Oh, he's like, "I'd go back to the future, not return to the future. Get it? Like, you know, like those movies I starred in." And then he goes, "You see," and he's telling the kids a story. He looks out on this open field. He goes, "Out there lies the future, son. Or anyway, it did lie there, or it should lie there, or it will lie there." "Emmett," Clara says, and Doc's like, you're right, Clara. It's time you learn about, it's time the boys learn about their father." So he tells them. He goes, "It may be unimpressive now, but in 1915, that barren patch of land will be owned by your family, the Browns, formerly the Von Brauns." I like that they bring that in from Back to the Future 3. But this is an entirely other tale for another time. Or that's an entirely other tale, the fact that they were the Von Brauns. And he said, "A boy couldn't ask for a better playground than 1640 Riverside Drive. You know where 1640 Riverside Drive is, right? It's a block past Maple. I mean, in the 80s, a block past Maple is John F. Kennedy Drive. But, you know, back in the 50s, who the hell is John F. Kennedy?" So Doc is kind of reminiscing, giving a history of his childhood, his growing up, and, of course, what we know became of the Brown Mansion. He says, "Though I suppose once I reinvent the flux capacitor, you and Jules will have all history as a playground. So a case could be made," because he says, "This place where I grew up is really the best, but I guess you guys are going to have the best because you can travel all over time." And I notice he's saying, "I need to reinvent the flux capacitor." My thinking, Doc, is why reinvent the flux capacitor? Oh, see, I keep saying it's a paradox. Why not go to the mine where the DeLorean is and take the flux capacitor there? But if he did that, then the flux capacitor would not be with Marty in the 50s to come back to the 1880s, right? So he has to leave that DeLorean as is, right? So now he's just got to reinvent the flux capacitor. He says, "I invented it the first time in that very house after falling off a toilet," which, and the kids are probably like, "What the hell's a toilet?" And he explains, he goes, "Which is a sort of an indoor outhouse, an invention I assure you will appreciate. But I digress." Well, should I do the voice? "But I digress." No, I'm not going to do it. "We had a fortune." Maybe I will. "And I had certain interests of an inventological bent. Long story short, the house burns to the ground in 1962. Now, I know we know the house burned to the ground, We saw Brown House Fire. We saw the newspaper in Doc Brown's lab. But I don't know if we knew it was in 1962, which, it's funny. I could say, Marty should say, hey, Doc, don't burn your house down. I forgot to mention that. Your house burns down in 7 years. So, you know, don't leave the stove on or something like that. But Doc Marty never did that. He says, some say it was accidental. Others say arson. Official cause undetermined. Well, Doc, I mean, did you light it? No, then it's accidental. Okay, I think Doc knows. I don't know what he's covering there. He says, hey, at least no one gets injured. Moreover, the auxiliary structure is untouched, luckily. And we see what turns into 1640, or what is there later, is just the garage. Doc says, by the 1970s, the majority of the property has been sold to developers. I think he must have told the kids they're time travelers, because the kids must be like, what the hell are you talking about, 1970s? But see, this is happening before they went and saw Marty and Jennifer in 1985, before he introduced them to Jules and Vern. And Vern was doing that weird thing with his hands. So this is him still trying to get that train going. So he says, by the 1970s, the majority of the property had been sold to developers. All that remained was the auxiliary structure, a reminder of a glorious past, encroached, if I could read, encroached upon by a banal present. Occupied by Emmett Lathrop Brown, me and me alone. Lathrop? Well, I guess that's officially his middle name. Is this the first time and the only time we see Emmett Lathrop Brown? But we do see what appears to be a Burger King right next to Doc Brown's garage. He says, you know, I was there. It was me and me alone until one day when everything changed. And that day is October 2nd, 1982, which is why in the corner of the art of this episode, it says October 2nd, 1982. And it looks like the next page, we're in the 80s at Lyon Estates. And we see a young fella in his garage playing guitar. And all we see are three shadows approaching and someone yelling, hey, McFly! Now, this is 1982, so this is 3 years before Back to the Future. So we're talking 1982. We're talking, Marty's supposed to be 14 years old here, I think. In reality, Michael J. Fox was what, like 35 or something like that? So, hey, McFly. And these three tough-looking guys show up. One skinny, one big and kind of heavy, and one a female. How's it hanging, McFly? I need to borrow your iterositor tube. And a girl's like, uh-huh. And the other guy goes, borrow, like in quotes, like, I need to take this from you. And Marty says, oh, hey, Needles, you need my what? Yes, folks, this is Needles. The Needles that we didn't know about until Back to the Future 2. We didn't know hung out with Marty until Back to the Future, until we saw a young version of Back to the Future 3. This is 3 years prior, so from this time, Needles went from probably 14, 15 to, I'm going to say, 35 or whatever Flea was in the 1990, even though, no, 1985. I need to borrow your interocitor tube. And Needles was like, yeah, it's for my amp, dipstick. The Tabascos have a gig tonight, and I blew my tube by rocking too hard. Now, folks, I didn't have an amp in the 1980s. In 1982, I was in sixth grade when I got my first amplifier. What would that be? Okay. I was 11 years old, 1987. I don't remember a tube in any of my amps. Now, maybe that's an old thing. I'm sure it's not incorrect, but I feel like, is this an amp from the 60s? I mean, it looks like a television tube. He's like, we have a big show tonight and we need the tube for rocking. And, you know, he's like, the way you're playing, your tube must be mint. Because I guess he rocks so hard, Needles rocks so hard that he blew the tube on his amp. And Marty's like, tell you what, Needles, I'll rent it to you for $5. And Needles is like, whatever, I'll pay you when I bring it back tomorrow. And he goes, no, pay me first. And there's a little scuffle, and he ends up dropping the tube. And Needle says, that was your fault, McFly. Now I'm going to have to pound you. Marty's like, what? I'm the one who's worse off. I had a tube, and now I don't. And Needle says, and I feel like Needles should be Needles Tannen. You know what I mean? Like, it almost feels like it fits. This is the lost Tannen. We go from Biff to Griff, but in the middle, we don't know anybody. What if Needles is Biff's son? Now, again, it shouldn't be, because his name should be Niff, because all the names rhyme. Well, I guess Buford doesn't. But, you know, I mean, who the hell came up with Griff? Anyway, Needle says, let me explain something to you, McFly. Life's unfair, okay? And today, today's my day to be unfair to you. But I'll give you a break. I don't know why I'm talking like Charlton Heston again. Today, I'll give you a break. You get another two by 4 o'clock, and I won't pound the crap out of you. Right, guys? Gulp. He's like, I don't even have any cash. How am I going to get one? And the girl's like, I guess you're going to have to steal one. And like, what's the matter, McFly? Chicken? And now, from 1982 to until Back to the Future 2, we didn't know that Marty didn't like being called chicken. But it's established here in the early 80s. Nobody calls me Needles. Nobody calls me Needles. Well, that's not his name. Nobody calls me Chicken Needles. Nobody. And then Needle says, then prove it. Be a man. Bring the tube to the clock tower by 4 o'clock, and then you'll get your guitar back. Oh, he took his guitar, too. What a little jerk. Marty's like, perfect. Just perfect. So Marty goes to the guitar store, and he's like, sorry, man, we don't have any Interaster tube, but you always had dozens of them. What happened? He's like, we sold them. All of them? They're like, yeah, to who? I don't know. I didn't make the sale. Like, can you look it up? And the guy looks it up. And he says, ELB Enterprises. But before I get there, I just want to note that the first thing we see is outside the music store. We hear that we see the text bubbles. But outside the music store, it's Red the Bum. He's just kind of walking by. A nice little cameo from Red the Bum. So the guy's like, ELB Enterprises? I never heard of it. They're over there at 1640 John F. Kennedy Drive. Mari says, 1640 JFK, great. Okay, I can just head over there and wait a second. 1640 JFK Drive, that's Dr. Brown. So Marty doesn't know him, but it must be an infamous place, like 1640. People must just stay away, the fact that this is Doc Brown's house. And the other guy goes, you know what? You're right. He might need him for his new improved death ray. So he has it's like a legendary kind of reputation for making crazy inventions, or at least trying to. And Marty's like, death ray? And the guy goes, well, that's what everyone says he's building. Actually, I think that's how he burned his house down back in 62. Even the whole town knows it's 1962. And Marty says, whoa, that's heavy. Did you ever meet him? I mean, did he ever come to buy these tubes himself? He's like, nope, mail order. Hey, McFly, don't be stupid. You go over there, you're taking your life into your own hand. That Doc Brown's a real nutcase. You're going to stop messing around with him. You're asking for trouble. Isn't that exactly what Strickland said to him? Because, you know, he's like, you're going to start acting just like him. No McFly would ever amount to anything in the history of Hill Valley. I don't know. Again, why am I talking like this? So he jumps over to 1640 JFK, and he sees this big fence. There's barbed wire around it. And Marty's like, well, yeah. Needles is demanding trouble. I take whatever I can get. So the guy says, you're gonna be asking for trouble. Marty just leaves, walks all the way to Doc Brown's house, and then answers him. I hate when that happens in cartoons or in anything. It just seems illogical. It is illogical. He's talking to himself, and people are like, what? So he goes up, he presses a buzzer. Now, there's a buzzer right outside, and there's a sign that says no entry. But it's not no entry, like don't enter. It's K-N-O-W, no, as in knowledge, as in no entry. What does that mean? Hello? Hello? This is a recording. Oh, okay. Marty went up to the speaker. He says, please go away. Do not push the button a second time. You have been warned. And Marty's like, what's with everybody warning me today? Just pick up the phone. He buzzes it again. Immediately gets electrocuted. And the recording says, clearly you were not one to foresee that. Clearly you were not one to foresee that. Remember that. He says, it was an electrical current, harmless but uncomfortable. Please leave now, or the next one will be considerably more comfortable. And Marty goes, huh, 124C. So he goes up to this code and he types in 124C. And on the very next page, the gate opens. Password correct. You may enter. Marty's like, kid stuff. I'm sorry. I have no memory of Marty being this like, like puzzle expert, but it works. He does it. He does it in this episode. He goes up to the house. He knocks. He's like, anyone there? He goes to a window. Eureka. He goes to jump up, looks in the window, sees the tubes. He's ready to steal these things, but the window's locked. He's like, oh, for all the good. He's like, I could just smash it, but come on, McFly, that's not who you are. Think, McFly, think. The padlock isn't going to open because of some wordplay, unless... Then he goes back out to the sign that says no entry, and he looks, and what's hidden behind the sign? A key. That's how you know entry. You'll know entry using the key. Now, I don't understand why the key goes right to the lock on the window, but he goes back to the window, unlocks it there instead of just going through the front door, and says, oof, good thing I'm not as big as Needles, sneaks in, and he goes, or I'd never get through, oops, knocks over some dominoes, which turns this giant Rube Goldberg machine on. So the dominoes knock over, hit a ball. These balls go down into a cup. The cup pulls a chain. The chain makes this machine turn on. The machine then flings a volleyball. The volleyball then hits a tire. The tire goes down, knocks a balloon up in the air. The balloon touches a sensor. The sensor pulls these ropes. The ropes drop these bricks. And then a net is pulled up, and Marty is pulled into the net, and he is trapped. He's like, oh my God, what kind of game is this guy playing? Now, I wouldn't be this calm. If I was told that a crazy scientist was working on a death ray, then I went to his house and was trapped in a net upside down, my face would be soaked with my own urine as I would just piddle from being so frightened. But Marty is cool as a cucumber. He takes his skateboard. He goes, maybe two can play at this. And somehow he sees this button that says reset. He puts the skateboard on the ground because he's hanging upside down, not peeing on himself. Rolls the skateboard, hits the reset button. Boom, knocks him completely right out of the net. He's fine. He goes, ouch. Now I just need to grab the, oh no, what now? Boom. A dog jumps on him, but we know it's Einstein. Wonderful, sweet Einstein, who just slurps and woofs. And he goes, ha, ho, ho, hey, hey, easy there, boy, easy. And then someone else says, great Scott, it's about time. And there we see Dr. Brown. He goes, Dr. Emmett L. Brown at your service. Congratulations, you passed the test. And you are, and Marty's like, Marty? Marty McFly? You already met Einstein, huh? Oh, you're applying for the job, right? The job? Doc says, as my assistant. It was all a big puzzle. I left those clues months ago. Eventually, I knew someone would figure it out. So when can you start? Marty's like, right now, I guess. Excellent, excellent. Your resourcefulness is most impressive. Using your skateboard to escape? Icing on the cake. And Einstein likes you. He's an excellent judge of character. Dr. Brown? And Marty says, Doc says, Doc. Call me Doc, as in, what's up, Doc? Doc, the truth is, I really didn't come here to apply for your job. And I like that Marty doesn't start off their relationship on a hill of lies. He actually does come clean. He goes, I needed a couple of interrocitor tubes. And when I found out that you sort of cornered the market, so this was actually a robbery? No. Not at first. I mean, if you answered the door, I would have asked you very, very politely. Doc says, well, it's my own fault. My reclusiveness has resulted in complications at various times in the past, but it's necessary. I simply cannot have people disturbing my work. What exactly is your work? Marty asks. He says, I never discuss it. Okay, cool. I get that. Like me, I never tell people or I never play a new song for someone unless I know I've got it right. And, oh, I like that in the corner we see Einstein's dog food all piled up in the bowl and very reminiscent of the opening of Back to the Future. And Doc says, Marty, Now, my truth, I wasn't advertising for a job. I just wanted to see what would happen if I offered you one. Oh, so this was like an experiment? Like a human experiment? Precisely. So there is no job? There is if you want one. And Marty's like, I get to hang around here in the middle of all this junk and just do stuff? It's like, yeah, I need you to run errands, procure supplies, possibly do inventory. Marty says, heck yeah, I want the job. And heck yeah, I can start today after an errand of my own. Doc says, don't you want to know what it pays? He says, I don't care. I'll just be happy just to be the guy who knows Dr. Emmett L. Brown. Then Doc says, but you can't tell anyone what goes on here. He's like, even better. Hey, about those tubes. So Marty goes to the tube box. It's completely empty. And Doc says, oh, those things? I just needed a box for the size of my static-o-matic electric hair dryer. He needed a box the size of his electric hair dryer? I guess to travel? Because we're getting ready? We know he has a hair dryer. We see it on him when Marty dressed as Darth Vader. We know it's in deleted scenes, so that must be the same static-o-matic electric hair dryer. He says, I dumped the tubes in the trash can outside. Marty says, so I could have just, never mind, Doc, thanks. So the whole time, that garbage that Marty jumped on twice to break in, well, once to look in, then once to break in, the tubes were in there the entire time. So later on the day, it's all in military time. It says 15:58, but we know that's 3:58, so just in time, he shows up to Needles, and we see Doc Brown telling his story again. He goes, you know, Vern, to this day, I don't know why Marty needed those interocitor tubes. And we see Marty talking to Needles. He says, so where'd you get this, McFly? He goes, I took your advice and stole one from Dr. Emmett L. Brown. And Needles was like, what? But that guy worked on the bomb. I heard he's radioactive. And Marty says, well, enjoy the tube, Needles. I'm sure it's fine. But Needles is holding his tube like he's frightened. Then the next shot we see is an amazing drawing. It's not high quality, but I love it. It's Marty in his vest, Doc in a yellow shirt. I think it's the yellow train shirt. Einstein kind of waving to the camera, and they're all standing outside, the DeLorean. And Doc says, whatever the case, that was the day I met Marty McFly. Without him, I would have never met your mother. And you would never have been bored by all your old man's tales. And Vern's kind of falling asleep. And Clara says, he's not even 3 yet, Emmett. You can't expect Vern to stay awake through a story like that. Doc says, of course not. Good thing I have millions of tales, Clara. Or he says, good thing I have a million tales, Clara. And all the time in the world to tell them. And that is the end of When Marty Met Doc. But as I told you, that is only story number 1 in issue number 1 of Back to the Future. Untold Tales, an alternate. Well, I keep wanting to say an alternative, so I screw up. It's alternate timelines. Let's go right to the second story. This is called Looking for a Few Good Scientists, story again by Bob Gale, but the script is by Eric Burnham, art by Dan Schoenig, and colors by Luis Antonio Delgado again. The cover art for this story is by Timothy Lim, and this cover art, it reminds me of like Norman Rockwell, Saturday Evening Post. I think it's like a direct kind of play on that, and it shows, it says Back to the Future instead of New York, Saturday Evening Post. Gale, Barber, and Burnham are the names. Schoenover and Schoenig, October 21st, 2015, $3.99 the copy. I think that is directly, you know, all playing on the old post covers. And it's a really nice drawing of Doc Brown with his goggles. He's got some striped pants on, a coat with a sports almanac in his pocket. He's got Einstein there. Einstein's got a dog bowl filled with food. We see a toy DeLorean on the ground, a drawing of the flex capacitor. There's a lot of Back to the Future stuff. We see a giant clock face behind him. We also see a plutonium case on the ground. And up in the upper left corner, there's a little photo of Doc and Marty in the 1880s in front of the clock tower. drawing for the Flux Capacitor, and Ooh La La Magazine, because Doc needs to have the porn hanging up too. Ooh La La Magazine hanging up on the wall. Did I mention the hoverboard? Yeah, a lot of cool stuff on this cover. And this was very, like, the art's very different. The story's very different. This, we're going back in time, okay? This, we're going back to the California Institute of Technology, 1943. Now, we know we met Doc in 55, but we're going back 12 years earlier. See how quick I did that math there? That is impressive. There was no editing. I just knew that 55 minus 43 is 12. And I did it again in my head just to make sure. Yep, 53 would be 10, 11, 12. Very good. Very good, Michael. So we're at college, and this guy, the drawing actually looks like Christopher Lloyd. Do you remember in Taxi when there was like Christopher Lloyd, the Reverend Jim, before he tried a pot brownie, he was like this really nerdy guy. Then he tried a pot brownie and everything changed. That's what this reminds me of, his look here. And so he barges into a room. It says, Robert, I have a bone to pick with you. And the guy says, Emmett, what? Don't you have a class to teach? It's fine. I have them working on the Jacobian conjecture. You don't teach a math course, which means they'll be more than thoroughly occupied. Oh, which means they'll be more than thoroughly. So he gave them math, even though he doesn't teach a math course, just to keep them busy. Now back to my point. I know, Robert, I know everything. I know that some of the finest minds ever produced by this institution have been quietly shuffled off to what I can only conclude from thorough research to it is a top secret think tank meant to benefit the war effort. Because this is, again, the 40s. We're in the middle of the war. He says, with my credentials, my name should have been top of that list. You should have bust me off ages ago. And Robert says, this guy looks kind of like Sam Neill. She's like, I'm not going to insult your intelligence here, Emmett. There is something going on, something highly classified, and your name did come up. But, and Emmett goes, I knew it. Why I have so much to do before I leave. He goes, can I bring my dog? This must be Copernicus. No, this is 12 years before Copernicus, so I don't know who his dog is here. It'd be interesting to find out. The guy goes, Emmett, slow down. There was a reason you weren't put forth. And Emmett goes, besides simple oversight? The guy says, you're fully qualified for a position, but, well, the vetting process involves an interview at your home with military brass, bureaucrats, possibly psychologists. And once they see your apartment, look, I just don't want you to be disappointed. And Emmett, because he's not called Doc Brown, he's just Emmett. He says, I suppose I can understand your point, Robert, but give me some credit. After all, then we turn the page, and he says, every problem has a tenable solution. So now I guess they're at his apartment having an interview, and the guy says, I must say, Dr. Brown, you are definitely not what we expected. Your colleagues characterize you as more, I don't know, chaotic, but your home is impeccable. I don't know why he's British, because he's, you know, trying to recruit him for the war. So it really speaks to the kind of disciplined mind we're after. And Emmett says, I couldn't agree more. There's another guy there, kind of perusing. He says, some interesting reference here. You're a big fan of needlepoint? And Emmett says, well, since anything can inspire a breakthrough, I don't like to discount anything. Good answer. Good answer. This interview was mostly a formality. I think it's safe to bet that. And then there's some mail on the ground. And the guy says, oh, I beg your pardon, doctor. I believe I just stepped on your mail. He goes, let me just get this. And Emmett says, no, leave that. You can leave that there. It's fine. And then he picks it up and looks at it and says, tell Mrs. Gomez to enjoy her issue of Good Housekeeping, Dr. Brown. We'll be in touch. So it turns out this wasn't Doc Brown's apartment. He was using a different apartment for the interview for first impressions. So now we see Emmett kind of walking down the street. We see a movie theater with Dal Hadley Moon in a movie called Time Flies. Oh, Time Flies, of course. He's walking by the theater and he says, I refuse to believe I've blown my only chance. There has to be another way. Think, Emmett, think. Think, McFly, think, huh? He goes, maybe if I, strange, I don't remember leaving the lights on. So he's going back to his actual apartment And we see a voice says, "You didn't. Welcome home, Dr. Brown." He goes inside, and there they are again. The same guys. It's nice to put a face to the name. Emmett says, "Great Scott. You're Oppenheimer. You're J. Robert Oppenheimer." Yes, ladies and gentlemen, not only are we in a prequel for Back to the Future, we're also in a prequel for Oppenheimer. Now, if they start playing with Barbies, I'm going to lose my shit. Okay, he says, you're J. Robert Oppenheimer. He's, yes, I remember. But what are you doing here? It was intimated that I'd fail the interview. And the guy who was interviewing says, "No, I said we'd be in touch. We were well aware that you were using your landlady's residence for the interview, Doctor. Pardon our charade." I don't know if they're Southern, but they're Southern now. They were British, now they're Southern. And Doc says, but it was explained to me that my apartment might... Pshaw. Milliken could be a little rigid about the connection between discipline and cleanliness. I want unconventional minds. This is Oppenheimer saying this. I have no idea what he sounds like. I haven't even seen the movie yet. Stay tuned to this podcast. People who see the world differently and aren't constrained by normal methods of problem solving. The kind of mind who first thinks to borrow an orderly apartment instead of simply cleaning his own. And Emmett says, "So I'm in? Say goodbye to the cushy life at Caltech, Brown, and welcome to the Manhattan Project." Emmett says, I have just the thing to mark the occasion I've been saving for this gentleman. Who's up for Jell-O?" And we see a Jell-O mold with, is that a mushroom in the middle? Oh, like a mushroom cloud? Is that what he's doing there? Is that the joke? So it seems like Emmett L. Brown has just been recruited to work on the Manhattan Project, to work on the bomb with Oppenheimer. And it makes me want to watch Oppenheimer eventually, you know, again, come back here in a couple months, and you'll hear my thoughts on that. Spoiler alert. It makes me want to look in the background to see if, you know, maybe Emmett Brown is there. But that is the ending of the second story in our little tale, which was, again, titled Looking for a Few Good Scientists. And that is the official ending of Back to the Future issue number 1. I thought this was a nice break to take from the cartoons. And again, these stories, I have a friend who's like, "You read comic books," like he makes fun of that. I'm like, dude, half the stuff you're watching on TV where it was a comic first. You know that Umbrella Academy you love, that Walking Dead you love? Guess where they started? It's just another form of storytelling. That's it. And this form is much more sophisticated than the cartoons I've been watching. The cartoons that I'll be returning to tomorrow. So I really liked doing that. That was fun to revisit those stories. I have to be honest, I remember them as I read them. I think we're going to get a story, you know, like a standalone story, and then the ongoing... Maybe that was it. I thought the Manhattan Project thing would be an ongoing thing, but I don't know. Because I looked ahead at the next story and I'm like, oh, nope, the second story I don't think is a continuation of this. So I wonder if there will be a continuation of this or if the next two stories will just be completely standalone as well. You know what? Doesn't matter. I'll be talking about them anyway, probably in another 5 or 6 days because we're going to get back to the cartoon tomorrow and talk about episode 6 of the animated series. But listen, until then, thank you guys for sticking around. Thank you guys for enjoying the show. I hope you're enjoying it. Thank you for being subscribed. That's my favorite thing. The fact that you subscribe, and even if you listen a little, I am tickled. I would do this if nobody listened. And clearly I've done that for certain things because I just like creating and recording and talking about things that I enjoy. And if you're finding this and listening to this, oh my God, it just makes my day. So listen up. Let's go through I'll do the homework as I usually do to end things up. Let's talk about social. You can find me on social media at Geek Mentality. That's where to go for everything. Mastodon.social, Twitter, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky. Geek Mentality, all one word. There's links to all that in the at fansnotexperts.com. Go to fansnotexperts.com to find every episode of Marty McFly, every episode of every podcast I do. This is part of Geek Mentality, which is where I do my movie month, and where I will be talking about a certain movie on June. I'll just say in June. I'm not going to give it away when yet, but I hope you go and I hope you just stay subscribed. If you're not subscribed to the podcast, if you're finding this on YouTube, please hit that like and subscribe button on YouTube. It helps. The more people that hit the little thumbs up, the more people find it. And it makes my day because I love doing this. This is my hobby. You know, I am a hobbyist podcaster, and I just love doing fun little things like this. But what I'm going to do now is get ready for bed. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for subscribing. I hope you enjoyed this podcast venture we took, this comic book venture that we took. And I'll get back to the cartoon tomorrow. But until then, you know what it's to say, right? You know what it is. I'll give you a moment to catch up. Get your family around. Everyone say it together. Get, like, if you're out in the field, like, you know, let's say you're coaching, but you have an earbud in your ear and you're kind of bored because the game's kind of boring. Grab the team. Get them all together. They all know what to do. Ready? Everyone on three. One, two, three. Here is my theme song.
This is my podcast. I made it. Geek Mentality is what I named it. And I think you should listen and subscribe. Cause I'm kind of funny and awesome. I think that I'm worth your time. And I'm kind of handsome. My mom says, please listen and please subscribe. At least listen to this episode.
Fans Not Experts.